This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. What day is this?
Four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep. Fourth day of Christmas.
It's the fourth day of
nightmare.
Christmas nightmares.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
there you go.
Kind of something like that. I hope everybody's enjoying these. It's fun for us to do.
Enjoying them in a murdery kind of way.
Yeah.
You know.
These are kind of easy to put together because we don't have to do any deep dive research. We just kind of, you know, or these are cases that there's really not a lot of stuff out there to find out about. So.
Yep.
Easy to do.
Well, I cannot wait. Do you want to kick us into gear?
Go. On Monday, September 4th, 2006, at approximately 5:30 p.m., Trooper Dan Hansen of the Maine State Police received a dispatch telling him that there's been a report of an unintended death at the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast in Newry, Maine. Now, dispatch put a call through to Trooper Hansen. A woman named Lee Graham stated that her stepson, Christian Nielsen, had called her husband Charles, and Christian had told Charles that he had killed some people. I hope I'm saying this right. It's Nielsen. I'm just going to go for Nielsen because it's N-I-E-L-S-O-S-E-N.
Nielsen. That would be like Nielsen ratings.
When Trooper Hansen arrived at the inn, he saw two men sitting on a bench, and before getting out of the car, he called for backup and then approached the father and son. Hansen asked Christian Nielsen, "What's going on?" Christian looked at Hansen's name tag and replied, quote, "Well, I killed some people, Dan. I shot them all. The guns in the house and the tool chest." Hansen then asked when this had happened, to which Christian responded, "Well, it had been a while." Trooper Hansen advised Nielsen of his Miranda rights and recited the warnings from memory, and Christian acknowledged that he understood his rights. Hansen then asked Christian if he would like to tell him what happened, and Christian stated that he did, but he only wanted to say it once. Hansen then informed Christian that detectives would be arriving shortly and he could wait to tell them what had happened. Then Hansen handcuffed Christian and placed him in the cruiser. After Christian was placed in the police car, his father, Charles, came to the window and asked him, you know, shouldn't you wait for counsel? And Christian responded, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Trooper Hansen didn't know how many victims he was dealing with, so he asked Christian, you know, I know that you said that you didn't want to talk until you spoke with counsel, but I need to ask this just in case there's anyone out there alive. And, you know, he said, I don't want to leave anybody out there that's bleeding. And Christian responded that, no, everyone's dead.
I knew you were going to say that. Just because of how his demeanor is going these days. Okay, go ahead.
31-year-old Christian Charles Nielsen was a cook at the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast. The Black Bear Bed and Breakfast, which was a remodeled 7-bedroom farmhouse in Newry. It's in the western part of Maine. And Newry is a very small town. So small that the 2010 census report that only 329 people live in the town.
Ooh.
So even though it's home, even though it's small, it's the home of the Sunday River Ski Resort, which is one of Maine's largest and most visited ski resorts. And they have like a large seasonal winter population. So a lot of people go there. And I think it has one of the second largest drops of any ski resort. You know, like
I never graduated from the Bunny Hill, and the bunny pill scares the hell out of me. So there you go.
No, I don't like snow, so I wouldn't even try.
I love snow, but
I'd just cry getting on skis, I'm sure. I'd cry trying to get on skis, I should say.
No, the hardest part is getting off that little brown thing. God, that gave me a nervous breakdown every time.
I think the hardest part would be putting on your ski outfit and then having to go to the bathroom again and then having to take it all off.
You just don't go.
Or you could just wear Depends.
Oh, Lord.
Pee pants.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
People that knew Christian considered him a bit odd. He was quiet and reserved, but he was a very hard worker. But you know what? No one ever really called him what he was, a psychopath.
Ugh.
And not only did Christian work as a cook at the Black Bear Inn, Christian was also employed at the Sudbury Inn in Bethel, Maine, which is about 10 miles away. So he worked two jobs. On Friday, September 1st, 2006, at the beginning of Labor Day weekend, Christian invited James Whitehurst to go on a hike in the woods in Upton, Maine, about 25 miles away. James was a 50-year-old handyman from Arkansas who had been staying at the inn for about a month. Once Christian and James were deep into the woods, they sat for a bit to have a cigarette break. Christian then said he had to go to the bathroom, and he gets up, walks behind Jim, grabs the .38 revolver that he had put in his waistband, the waistband of his pants, and then Christian shoots Jim twice, point blank, right in the back of the head. They hadn't been fighting. There wasn't any ill will between the two. Just shot him dead. And then later when the police asked him why he did it, Christian would reply, quote, "I just objected to his presence."
Didn't he invite him to go with them?
He did, but he invited him to kill him. That was just his plan, to kill him. Christian then grabbed James by his legs and dragged him further into the woods and left his body under a bunch of brush. Christian then set back to go to the Sudbury Inn to go to work. The next morning, Christian returned to Jim's body, poured gasoline over it, and then set it on fire. Once the fire went out, Christian then buried Jim's remains in a shallow grave. Now, I got a lot of the quotes from the TV show Signs of a Psychopath, because there wasn't a lot of anything else besides newspaper articles and like the court documents that even went into detail.
Right.
But when Christian is asked by authorities if he buried Jim because he was remorseful, Christian replied, he did it because that's what you do with a dead body. And he just wanted to get it in the ground before it started to smell.
Oh, well, okay. He's a caring
He's not wrong.
Sociopath.
I mean, he's just very, he's a psychopath. He's just, that's the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. On Sunday, September 3rd, Christian woke up and decided to kill 65-year-old Julie Ballard. Now, Julie was the owner of the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast, and he knew that it was only going to be a matter of time before she noticed Jim was missing.
Oh.
So that morning, Christian walks.
Again, let me point out, I don't think he thought that through because that's his employer, right? And if he kills
Well, it's one of his employers.
Okay.
There's some people that think that he actually wanted to take over the lodge, but there's no proof.
Killing everybody that works there is probably, yeah, that's one way to do it,
and supposedly the lodge wasn't doing very well. Julie wanted to sell it. She was losing money.
Maybe she should have sold it to
him. So it wouldn't have been a very good financial thing for him to do. But killing people isn't a very sound thing to do either.
My financial advisor strongly recommends I do not do that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
In the morning, Christian walks to Julie's bedroom, pulls out his gun, and he tries to kick in the door. Doesn't work. It's too strong. The door's too strong. So then Christian threw his entire body on the door, and it burst open, and the locks break. Julie sits up and exclaims, "What the hell?" And then Christian fires the gun and keeps firing. Quote, "It blew her out of the bed and into the wall. It was amazing." Christian proceeded to cut Julie Bullard in half. Then he dismembered her, wrapped her in a tarp, and dragged her body into the woods. Then he left for work at the Sudbury Inn.
He kind of likes leaving him out there for a little while first, doesn't he?
He's got to think it over.
Okay. You know what? I really like his work ethic because he's not letting burying a body get in the way.
And nobody knew. Like, he went to work and nobody knew anything was wrong. He just kept plowing through. Yeah.
Right.
Then the following day, Monday, September 4th, Christian woke up, had breakfast, cleaned up all the blood from Julie's room, And then he shot three of the dogs that lived in the inn.
He shot the dogs?
Mm-hmm. He shot one because he said it was like 12 or 13 years old and, quote, it's way, way too old for a dog.
I'm glad he gets to make that judgment call.
Another person, the prosecutor, said that another reason why he killed the dogs is because he had cut the bodies, fingers off the bodies. And presumably to get any rings. And he didn't want the dogs to take the fingers.
He didn't want it to be finger food?
Yeah. Now, he did say he felt bad about killing the dogs, but nobody really believes him because, one, killing animals is pretty much the hallmark of psychopaths. I mean, once
not to mention, like, he obviously doesn't care about anything.
Exactly. He's going to kill no matter what. Now, Christian had one more he knew he had to kill. 30-year-old Selby Bullard, Julie's daughter. Now, Selby was recently widowed, and she had two children, ages 8 and 12. Christian didn't have to wait long for the chance. A few hours later, Selby and her friend Cindy Beetson, who's 43 years old, showed up at the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast looking for Julie. Selby and Cindy walked into the inn and just asked Christian where Julie was, because Selby hadn't heard or seen her mother for over 24 hours. As Selby walked into the inn, she headed straight towards Julie's bedroom, and Cindy followed her. Christian was trailing right behind. When Selby gets right inside her mother's bedroom, she turned and asked Christian, "Did you kill my mother?"
Oh.
And just as the words were out of her mouth, Christian shot Cindy in the back of the head, then turned the gun on Selby and shot her. They both fell immediately to the ground. Later, authorities would ask if he thought killing them was a bad thing for him to do. He said, quote, "Doesn't make any difference. It's done. They're dead. I'm alive."
No, he did not. He added that I'm alive.
If you go watch Signs of a Psychopath, it's the second episode. It gave me the shivers listening to him. He's just so matter of fact. There's parts where the psychiatrist is asking him questions and he just doesn't even know why she's asking him the questions. He doesn't get, like, she doesn't understand why. You know what I mean? Like, he's just doesn't.
No, I totally get it. But I just can't. That's so weird to me. Like, I can't get into that. I can't understand that.
Yeah. No feeling. I mean, just he describes everything just like you'd get up, took a shower, cleaned up the blood in my rooms, cut my toenails, brushed my hair, shot two women, killed the dogs.
Chopped off their fingers.
Yeah. Just it was just matter of fact. Nothing. It's wow. Scary. That is what makes me scared. People mm-hmm. like that make me scared.
I agree.
Anyway, so after he shot Selby and Cindy, he cut them in half, dismembered them, wrapped them in tarps, and dragged them into the bush, just as he did with Julie's remains. Christian then goes back inside and calls his father, Charles, and says, you know, can you come out to the bed and breakfast? After Charles arrives, he explains to his dad what he's done, and his father calls the police. And when the authorities later asked Christian how his dad reacted to the murders, Christian said, well, I don't think he thought it was awesome or anything.
Not funny, but
could you imagine? I mean, no, how horrifying.
I was just thinking about getting that phone call from your child. And
going out there? Like, yes. He took his dad out there and showed dad everything and told him what happened. And I mean, sure, his father
was. So at that moment, he had to know what he did was wrong because he told on himself. Right?
I guess.
He just didn't care.
Yeah. It's just shocking. I don't even know how I react, but God love his father for calling the police. I mean, that's true love right there. Seriously.
I'd be scared he's going to kill me, even though it's your child.
Well, that's funny. You should say that. They asked why he didn't kill his dad, and he goes, well, he's my dad. Like, why would I kill him?
See, that's what I mean.
He
has some sort of feelings, empathy, but not definitely misplaced. Mm. Okay, go ahead.
So now we're back at the part where after Trooper Hansen shows up. Trooper Hansen, while waiting for additional law enforcement officers to come, he asked Charles to describe where the victims were. And Hansen followed a trail of blood that leading out of the inn and through the grass to some brush, and in the brush, he discovered the remains of Selby and Cindy, as well as the remains of the dogs. He also learned from Charles that there were 4 victims in total. 3 were near the inn, and 1 was in Upton in the woods. And Hansen eventually discovered Julie later, about 50 yards from the other 2. Charles, the dad, approached Christian and said, you know what, the police are going to be going to Upton. And at first, Christian's like, oh, that's good. That's where my mom lives. Right? And then Charles said, no, they're going up there to look for Jim's body. And then Christian said that the police wouldn't find the body because he had burned it. And then he proceeded to give directions to the police officer that was going out there to search for the body. And they were able to find it in the fire pit, just as Christian described. And then a forensic anthropologist later confirmed that the pit did, in fact, contain the remains of Jim Whitehurst. After he was arrested and confessed to the killing, confessed to everything, just told everybody straight out what he did, with no emotion, I might add. But while he was awaiting trial in December of 2005, Christian was placed on suicide watch because he was cutting X's on his scalp for some reason. And then in 2007, the spring of 2007, Christian went on a hunger strike, and he lost 55 pounds, which put his weight down to 103. And he was a fairly tall guy, just by looking at pictures. I never did find the right weight. But the sheriff went to court and was given permission to force feed him out of concern that his body would begin to shut down. The sheriff said Christian did, quote, articulate his wish to die at least once during his hunger strike. At the trial, Selby's sister Brooke read a statement written by Selby's 10-year-old son.
Aww.
And the statement entitled, How My Life Changed and I Was Forever Wounded. The child said he couldn't understand the violence that took his mother's and grandmother's lives. Quote, they have all walked the stairway to heaven. At least there's no violence up there.
Aww.
Now, according to prosecutors, like I said earlier, Christian had no specific motive, but told investigators that he had been obsessed with thoughts of killing someone for several years. In an interview, Christian said he knew he would kill someone from the time he was 13. He had always just thought about killing somebody. And then when he was asked if he would have killed more people if his dad hadn't called the police, he said, quote, yeah, it's what I do.
Oh, okay.
2 forensic psychologists testified that he was not legally insane, though, but he did suffer from schizoid personality disorder, which made it hard to express emotions or show remorse. One doctor said that Christian's motivations for the murder remains a mystery and that he still doesn't understand Christian himself, even though he's spoken with him for over 20 times. The doctor said, quote, I feel like I do not understand what has happened to him.
Well, and I guess I think he had a pretty good upbringing, right? I mean, it sounds like it.
Yeah. Charles Nielsen apologized for the pain his son has caused at the trial. And he also asked the judge for compassion. And then Charles turned to Christian, his son, and said, I love you.
Yeah.
At the sentencing hearing, Justice Robert Crowley said, quote, when all is said and done, Christian Nielsen has committed 4 of the worst criminal acts in recent Maine history. And on October 18th, 2007, Christian was sentenced with 4 concurrent terms of life in prison. And in Maine, if he received the life sentence, there is no chance of parole.
I think that's probably wise.
I would think so, too.
Him.
Yeah. So this is a super short episode, but this is basically all I found on him.
Mm-hmm. It amazes me that people, like, one of my favorite sayings, again, is there's signs. There's always signs. And I don't know how somebody gets to his age and no one, a coach, a teacher, a parent, a friend's parent, says, you know, there's something a little off with Christian.
Well,
right?
They said he was odd, right? They thought he was odd. He was quiet. Look at Dahmer. Nobody suspected Dahmer, right?
Yeah,
he was odd. Like
those are the most frightening people, monsters.
That's scary.
You don't see it coming. I mean, why? He just woke up one day and decided he's going to go kill all those people.
Right. He said by the time he was 13, he knew he was going to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And well, he had been waiting. Like, he had recently purchased that gun, like, a few weeks before. And the James Whitehurst, that man had polio as a child, and he had smaller legs. His legs were smaller than his upper body. So maybe he felt that that was an easier person to kill. He would possibly well, weaker.
Or than, going back to his dog analogy, where the dog was, that's way too old.
Maybe way, way too old, yeah.
Warped mind, he thought, well, I'm just going to do this guy a favor. Who knows?
But I find it weird, too, that, you know, the quote for these doctors was like, well, it's what I do. I kill people, right? But then now he's going on a hunger strike. And granted, I don't know why he went on a hunger strike. But then he actually thought about killing himself.
Mm-hmm. One of the people that I'm profiling in this little series here, and it was shocking, but he's so determined. He was like, this was my life's passion. This was it. And he was like, can you imagine putting this in your head at like age 6? And this is, you knew you were going to do this. This is all you thought about. This is all you did, all you wanted to do. And then you're finally doing it. It's your life's passion. What makes you passionate? What gets you excited? And I'm thinking, really? But putting it in that context, I'm like, wow. Wow. Like that, you know?
How sad that you would have nothing to look forward to except that.
Well,
right?
Totally. And thinking that that has to be an obsession like that in your head, that over and over and over and thinking about it and thinking about it. And he finally did commit his first murder at age 20. But he almost did it at 16 and it snuck in his life at age 6. He said he was 6. And I'll talk about all that. But same thing, because I've never really heard a killer say it like that. And he's like, this is, it's my life's passion. It's what I was here to do.
Yeah. Seriously, go look at the TV show Signs of a Psychopath. And when
I'm going to,
speaking,
right after this.
Unless you have ID Channel, I think it's on Amazon and it's $1.99. But the guy is just like, it's everything is just, it's a matter of fact. And he goes through the motions. Like, he takes the police to where they're interviewing him and they're taking him through the woods. And he even, the woman is behind him and he even picks up the branch so she's doesn't get hurt. But you know, that's just an act. That's just something that he's been trained to get, you know?
I'm not sure.
It's
only
scary.
Because yesterday when I called you about that one guy that killed somebody here in Missouri, and I'm totally enthralled with this guy now because I, same thing in his mind. He says he has never understood how people feel things. He can kill somebody. He doesn't even take a second to think about it. It means nothing to him. But yet he is still talking about how much he loves his wife and they have a daughter and how much he wants his daughter. And so I was like, that's so conflicting to me because you obviously have emotions about your wife and your daughter and you love them. That is an emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is something you feel. So how can you not feel something when you kill somebody, when you snuff their life out?
Right.
Right.
No, and his poor father, could you imagine walking up there and having your son describe what he did and stuff that is so horrific? I mean, he used hacksaws and chainsaws and picks and he dismembered these bodies, and then have your son to just explain it like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He did such violent, horrible things to human beings, and it's not fazed him.
But that's what I'm wondering.
That would be mortifying for me, for my child. I can only imagine what that poor father was thinking. And to still love his son, to still turn to him and say, I love you, is...
I get that part. Remember, I know we've talked about this on the podcast.
I mean, I would love my child no matter what, but it's just... I would still kind of blame myself for...
Oh, that's why I'm wondering, I don't know, but there has to be some... You don't just overnight do that. There had to be...
Warning signs.
But also, just like growing up, every killer, for the most part, that we have talked about on this podcast, there's something. Like, something was off when they were younger, right?
Mm-hmm. There's nothing on this guy. Like, nothing. I've searched.
Well, that we know about.
Hardly...
But I mean, no. I mean about his parents. Like, what could they say, you know?
Right. I don't know. But watching that show, I was chilled to the bone. That was scarier than any horror movie I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of his responses to questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I, just And when he walked up and he's like, well, Dan, I killed some people, you know, like
not funny, but the delivery. Yeah.
No, I know. I mean, not emotional. I even told my husband, I'm like, you know, out of all the things I've covered, this one's really scary. I mean, of course, the Sandy Jeffers with the guy standing over the bed, that was pretty scary, too.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that we walk amongst people that actually are like this.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. You know, statistically, as a teacher, I'm sure I've had some sociopaths in my class. I just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the human mind, and I would love to see if he had some sort of brain injury or his brain makeup, because I'm intrigued with that, because almost always there's an injury or there is something in the brain that, you know, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying.
Well, if you find anything, let me know, because I searched.
No, I'm
and
just
I couldn't find.
With him or with anybody. Like, there's yeah. always, you know, and stupid stuff. Like, because I'll go down the rabbit hole with this stuff all the time because it interests me. But a lot of times, you know, the people will say, no, I didn't know. I've never had a brain injury. I've never had anything. Oh, okay. Oh, well, my mom, I did have the cord wrapped around my neck during delivery and I was deprived of oxygen. And it's like, yeah. okay, well, that's a brain injury, right? Like, it's an injury to your.
Or one of my children could say, you know, that one time my mom was half asleep putting me back in bed and she hit my head on the door jamb while she was carrying me in.
Totally.
That's,
yeah. I got you. But yeah. anyway, well, very interesting case. And now I'm going to go watch that show.
Yes, it's called Into the Woods at Midnight, Signs of a Psychopath. That's where I got all the quotes from, because otherwise all the other coverage that I found mm-hmm. had nothing. Mm-hmm. Just the straight up, this is what happened. This is, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Well,
I have a flavor. That, I added those.
Mm-hmm, the guy that I'm obsessed with now, I can only find one interview on him. So I'm going to have to quote like that. But mm-hmm. the interview is so fascinating, intriguing. Like, I could not look away. I think that's okay. You know, I mean, I don't want to steal somebody else's stuff, but there is nothing else.
Like, exactly.
An important story to tell, I think, you know?
That's why I had a totally different person for number four to do. But then I came across this guy and there was hardly anything. And I'm like, well, number four had a lot. The first one had a lot more, so I could do a longer episode. Whereas mm-hmm. this one, it was, 20 minutes mm-hmm. at best? So that's why I switched it out, because it's 12 Nightmares of Christmas. Because even though you get a short one today, who knows
you
what's
know
in your
tomorrow.
Stocking tomorrow.
That's right. Oh, that's a good one. I like that. All right, Jen. Well, stay tuned for tomorrow when we have another exciting episode brought to you by moi. That's French for me. Just kidding.
Sorry. You're so fancy.
Oh, no money. Anywho, until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Kwanzaa. Happy New Year.
Love you all.
Let's hope New Year's a lot better
really,
than
we do.
Freaking year, because it sucks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya. Yeah, you want to start? On Monday, September 4th. Huh? Should I start?
I was quick. Yeah, I was going to say, okay, and you beat me to it. Okay, go ahead. I'm ready. And go.
The next morning, excuse me, I have demons coming out of my throat. Get out.